Chapter 4, No Infinite Compounding. The problem of exponential growth. The fundamental problem with conventional debt is not interest itself. It is compounding. At 5% annual interest, $100 becomes approximately $432 after 30 years, $1,147 after 50 years, and more than $13,000 after a century. The underlying principle may be unchanged in a contractual sense, but when interest is capitalized, the financial claim grows exponentially. That arithmetic creates a structural problem when liabilities persist for decades. The economy, however, does not grow exponentially forever. Population, resources, energy, and physical production all face constraints. When financial claims compound faster than the productive capacity supporting them, the gap eventually has to be closed through higher growth, inflation, taxation, restructuring, or default. This is the arithmetic at the center of the infinite debt problem. The proposed alternative is simple: pay the return, don't compound it into the principal. A productivity bond has a fixed principal and a variable coupon. The coupon can change from year to year, but unpaid returns are not automatically added to the outstanding principal. That distinction is fundamental. What does no compounding mean? A common objection is immediate. But the bond still pays a return. Isn't that interest? Yes. The difference is what happens to that return. With conventional compound debt, unpaid interest can become part of the debt itself. Debt of t equals principal times 1 plus r to the power of t. Under the proposed structure, debt of t equals principal. The investor receives the annual coupon separately. The principal remains fixed until maturity. This does not eliminate the government's obligation to make coupon payments. Nor does it make the bond risk-free. It simply prevents the outstanding principal from automatically generating an ever larger claim. That is the mechanism that matters. The cap. The cap limits the maximum real return paid in any period. In the standard model, the real return cap is 5%. If productivity rises dramatically, the investor participates in the improvement, but only up to the agreed ceiling. The exact level would be determined at issuance and fixed in the bond's legal terms. A range of roughly 3 to 7% could be considered depending on market conditions and the required investor return. The cap serves two purposes. For investors, it defines the maximum participation they are purchasing. For government, it prevents an extraordinary productivity boom from producing an equally extraordinary debt service obligation. The principle is simple. Investors receive meaningful participation in upside without obtaining an unlimited claim on future productive gains. The floor. The floor works in the opposite direction. In the standard model, the real return cannot fall below 0%. If productivity declines sharply, the coupon can fall to inflation alone rather than becoming negative in real terms. This provides a degree of protection for investors such as pension funds, insurers, and conservative institutional portfolios. The floor is fixed in the bond's terms and cannot subsequently be altered by the issuing government. Together, the cap and floor establish a defined range within which the variable return can move. The asymmetric structure. The architecture is deliberately asymmetric. The cap limits government exposure to exceptional upside. The floor limits investor exposure to downside. The variable component allows both sides to participate in changing economic conditions. The fixed principal prevents the claim itself from compounding indefinitely. This creates a different relationship between borrower and lender. A conventional fixed-rate bond gives the investor a predetermined claim regardless of the economy's performance. The government carries most of the economic risk. The proposed structure shares more of that risk while putting explicit limits on both sides. It is not risk elimination. It is risk redesign. Conventional debt vs. the alternative. Consider a $1,000 obligation at 4%. If interest is compounded into the principal, the balance becomes approximately 10 years, $1,480. 20 years, $2,191. 30 years, $3,243. Under a non-compounding structure, the principal remains $1,000. The investor receives whatever annual coupon is specified, but the coupon does not automatically become additional principal. That distinction becomes increasingly important over long periods. A 30-year financial claim does not become a 30-year exponential claim. The mathematical difference. The comparison can be expressed in its simplest form. Conventional compound debt. Debt of T equals P times 1 plus R to the power of T. Non-compounding principal. Debt of T equals P. The first equation has an exponential term. The second does not. This does not mean the government faces no future payments. It means those payments are not recursively added to the amount on which future payments are calculated. That removes one of the most powerful mechanisms driving long-term debt accumulation. Why this matters for stability. Financial stability depends partly on keeping obligations within the capacity of the economy to service them. When liabilities compound automatically, periods of weak economic performance can become progressively more difficult. The government may respond by borrowing more, cutting expenditure, raising taxes, or relying on stronger future growth. A non-compounding structure does not solve every fiscal problem. Governments can still borrow too much, spend too much, or issue coupons they cannot comfortably afford. But it removes one automatic source of escalation. The difference is important. The debt does not grow simply because time passes. That creates more predictable long-term liabilities and reduces the need to rely on ever larger future output to support yesterday's obligations. Why this reduces the growth imperative? If debt compounds indefinitely, economic output must continually expand to keep the debt burden manageable. A fixed principal changes that relationship. The economy can become more productive without having to become proportionally larger, simply to service an exponentially expanding financial claim. This is the broader objective of the model. Move the financial system from requiring expansion toward rewarding improvement. An economy can become more efficient, innovative, and capable without endlessly increasing its physical throughput. That distinction becomes increasingly important as demographic, resource, and ecological constraints tighten. Distribution rather than accumulation. Compounding also has distributional consequences. Interest payments transfer income from borrowers to creditors. When those claims compound over long periods, financial wealth can accumulate increasingly among existing asset holders. The alternative proposed here is not to eliminate private investment returns. It is to place a ceiling on the real return from this particular sovereign instrument, while directing part of the wider productive surplus through the productivity dividend described in Chapter 3. The result is a different flow. Capital receives a return. Government retains fiscal capacity. Citizens share in productive gains. The objective is to prevent financial claims from absorbing an ever-growing share of future prosperity simply because they were created in the past. A different kind of debt. The argument is not that conventional bonds should disappear. Fixed-rate sovereign debt has important advantages: simplicity, liquidity, established markets, and predictable payments. The proposed instrument is an additional option. Governments could issue a mixture of conventional and productivity-linked debt, allowing the market to determine the appropriate balance. The deeper proposition is that sovereign debt does not have to follow a single design. A financial claim can be fixed or variable, compounded or non-compounding, entirely borne by the borrower, or partially linked to economic performance, designed around expansion or around productive improvement. Once these choices are made explicit, the architecture of debt becomes something that can be redesigned rather than simply inherited. The end of automatic escalation. The phrase "no infinite compounding" does not mean that debt disappears. It means that debt no longer contains an automatic mechanism for becoming exponentially larger, merely through the passage of time. The principle remains fixed. The return varies within defined limits. Exceptional gains do not create unlimited obligations. Weak performance does not automatically create a larger principal. And the financial claim is tied more closely to the productive capacity of the economy that ultimately supports it. That is the essential shift. The question is no longer, how much can the economy grow to keep servicing an ever-growing claim? It becomes, how can financial claims participate in prosperity without demanding that prosperity grow forever? The productivity bond is one proposed answer. It does not promise a perfect financial system. It does something more practical. It removes one of the most powerful sources of automatic exponential expansion and replaces it with a bounded state contingent return. Debt can still exist. Returns can still exist. Investment can still be rewarded. But the claim itself does not have to grow forever.